Welcome to Coffee Table Mythos. I'm Eliza.
And I'm Leah.
For our new listeners, where can they find us?
Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, coffeetablemythos@gmail.com, anchor.fm, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. How can they support us?
By liking, following, sharing, subscribing, and reviewing our podcast. Reviewing our podcast helps others find us so that our family can grow. Come interact with us.
You can use our hashtag, CoffeeTableMythos, to show us your cool art of the entities we cover. Email us to let us know what you want to hear about, or message us on Instagram or Facebook. What about merch?
For now, visit us on Teespring at teespring.com/store/coffee-table-mythos for shirts, hoodies, stickers, and more. Leah is testing out prototypes so that we can make our own merch soon. You can also donate to us at anchor.fm/coffee-table-mythos/support. All donations will go to making this podcast better.
And with that,
grab your favorite beverage and let's talk myths. What you drinking today?
I am drinking a caramel iced coffee from Dunkin'. What are you drinking today?
I'm drinking a Charlie Cold Foam cold brew from Dunkin' because they were out of my vanilla smoke.
For shame.
For shame. So what do you have to talk about this week?
Alrighty, so Eliza referenced these guys a long time ago in one of the Celtic episodes. Are you ready for me to butcher all of the Celtic words?
I am. Sorry, that's terrible.
Hold on to your coffee mugs because this week I'm going to tell you all about the Fomorians. Fomorian is the English word for what is generally considered a supernatural race in Irish mythology. Except this first little bit about language, I will be using the English word so I don't hurt your ears too much. I've had a hard enough time speaking my first language this week. Irish is not going to be easy.
Probably going to be better than mine. I mean, my attempts, I mean.
I would not put money on that.
Damn.
The modern Irish word for these beings is Fomoa, spelled F-O-M-O with an accent. Except in Irish, it's called a fada. So, O fada, R-A-I-G-H. Then working backwards in time, the word in Middle Irish is fomoach, spelled F-O-M-O fada, R-A-I-G. And in the Old Irish, it's fomoich, spelled F-O-M-O fada, R-I. All of these are the plural, as I will mostly be talking about them in regards to a group of beings. But in each type of Irish, there is a slightly different word that means the singular version. But I'm not going to put you all through any more of that right now. The sad part is that I had to use an actual alphabet pronunciations list because I couldn't find reliable pronunciations of the words. So I probably still didn't piece them together the way they should be. It took me over an hour.
Oh, man. Just for that little bit.
And that's what I came up with.
Okay.
So moving on. The Fomorians are usually shown as the antagonists. They are the enemy of the Tuatha De Danann. They are the darkness to the Tuatha De Danann's light. But similarly to the Aesir and the Jotun of Norse mythology, there is references to intermarrying of the two groups. There are also a couple of Fomorians that are listed as Fomorians, but then their sibling is sometimes listed as Tuatha De Danann, so that also makes it a little hard to differentiate the groups. But for the most part, think of them as the hostile side of things. They are sometimes portrayed as having come from underground or under the sea. Even though the entire etymology is debated, there is a general consensus that the fo at the beginning of the word means under or nether. The second part, more, is where the debate heats up a bit. One camp believes it comes from Old Irish muir, meaning sea, hence why they would be depicted as coming out from under the sea or on ships. Camp 2 thinks, similar to the part of the goddess Morgan's name, that it references phantoms. And Camp 3 believes it comes from more, meaning big or great. This lends itself to the depiction of the Fomorians as giants. Also a parallel with the Jotuns.
Mm.
There are also places that make the connection of the Fomorians to Vikings, which makes sense because the people settled on the island of Ireland were attacked by invading Vikings for a period of time. Because we don't have a perfect timeline of etymology, some suggest that using the meaning of sea is a folk entomology that evolved later on due to these experiences. This would paint the Tuatha De Danann as the people already living on the island.
Damn.
However, there is another thought process about who these Fomorians were. On sacredtext.com, there is a 1911 text called The Religion of the Ancient Celts by J.A. McCulloch. In Chapter 4, it covers the Irish mythological cycle. In it, McCulloch suggests that the Fomorians are the gods of the Aboriginal people of Ireland, and that when they were defeated by the invading peoples, their gods were turned into monsters, and the invaders' gods were turned into the Tuatha De Danann.
Ooh, spicy.
Mm-hmm. He mentions that even after they were conquered, there were still ritual sacrifices to the Fomorians to stop them from destroying their crops. So the Aboriginal gods of fertility became destructive in the new order, but they were still worshipped to keep crops and milk safe. Another option he suggested was that they were the local gods of a single tribe, and the Tuatha De Danann were the local gods of a rival warring tribe. One thing I was wondering while researching was, were these stories coming from a single area or many? And it appears that there were stories of invaders throughout the entire island, so much so that there were stories that were actually duplicates and different versions of the same events. As with the chronicling of Norse mythology, Irish mythology was an oral tradition that was written down after the fact by early Irish Christians. This is likely why there were also issues of continuity in the lore.
Hmm.
Regarding descriptions, they range from monstrous, some with one eye, one arm, and one foot, all the way to darkly beautiful. This appears to be based on rank, as though the rank and file were terrifying, while the higher caste, such as Alatha and Bress, were considered very beautiful. Alatha was the king of the Fomorians and was considered blonde and handsome. They are also considered a warring race that's strongly interested in fighting and taking over groups of other people. This is shown in the waves of invaders that the Fomorians beat back, but also in how they went to war with the Tuatha De Danann, eventually enslaving them. At the first battle of Mog Turd, the High King Nuada lost his arm, and since there was a rule about High Kings needing to be whole and perfect, he could no longer rule. In possibly an attempt to unite Fomorians and Tuatha De Danann, the king that was chosen to take his place was Bress, son of Tuatha De Danann woman Eriu and Fomorian king Alatha. But Bress ignored the rules of hospitality and made the Tuatha De Danann work for the Fomorians and pay them in tribute. This lasted for 7 years. During that time, the Tuatha De Danann forged a silver hand for Nuada and fitted it for him. Once it was perfected, he was able to retake the throne from Bress. Bress was furious and asked his father to help him take it back, but Alatha told him that it was shameful that he would attempt to take the throne back by force that he could not keep justly. So Bress went instead to another Fomorian leader named Baelor of the Evil Eye. They raised an army, and this partnership eventually led to the second battle of Mog Turd. Enter Lu, arriving at Nuada's court. He was also the child of both races. He gains renown for his many talents, and Nuada gives him control of his own army. During the battle, Nuada is killed by Baelor, but then Lu, Baelor's grandson, kills him with his sling, shooting his eye out through the back of his head. The evil eye flew through his own army, causing havoc among them. After the battle, Bress is found alive, and his life is spared because he promised to teach the Tuatha De Danann about agriculture. The rest of the Fomorians were driven out to sea.
Damn.
Minus some of the magical parts of the story, such as the evil eye that could kill with a single look and the silver hand that magically worked as well as a real hand, the story reads as an epic history between two clans. But the general consensus is that they were more than mortal people fighting these battles. These days, the Fomorians can be found in multiple places. They're a giant kin race in D&D with a chaotic evil alignment in 5e, but a neutral alignment to evil alignment between the other editions. There are cards in Magic the Gathering, such as the Fomori Nomad, a nomad giant creature card. In Final Fantasy XI, there is a race of enemy undead called Fomars. And in PC Cast's book, Elfemy's Choice, she describes Fomorians. They also appear in her book, Divine by Mistake. Individual Fomorians also appear as characters in A Bunch of Things. And that is a brief rundown of the Fomorians, a maybe mythical, maybe very real group of people that either way have had a big impact on Ireland and its mythology.
Damn, son. I've been trying to figure out if that word is Elfame or Elfame.
Yeah.
Because it means, like, elf. It's like their version of elves. I'll get into that online.
I was going to say, yeah, I have never seen that word before, so I am unsure.
Yeah, but that's, like, specific to the... I've seen it only in the Scottish stuff I was looking at. It was Scottish Gaelic.
I'm going to guess that that's where she took her inspiration from then, when she was writing the books.
Possibly, yes.
Is it a person's name there, or is it...
That was, like, Queen of Elfame.
So it was, like, a location.
It's a location.
Interesting.
Or a people's.
All right.
Yeah. But anyway, I find it very interesting that there's, like, so many different possibilities to what they could have been in real life.
Right. And there's a whole part I did not go into because it very much syncs up with Christianity, because apparently there were many waves of people that came to the island and then died out, and then another wave of people would come and they would die out.
Jeez.
And in the versions I was reading, they were specifically saying this wave of people were the children of Cain and this wave of people were the children of Noah. And I was like, this is a mythology podcast, but if we ever do biblical stories, we will probably have to go in depth into them, and yeah. I'm not trying to bring them into the stories that we're talking about.
Right. That's, like,
generally
different.
So I went with the other versions of the stories.
All right. I can respect that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find anything else interesting?
The whole deal with Lou killing Baelor actually mirrors one of the Greek stories, because Baelor was told that one of his kin would kill him. And when his grandchildren were born, I believe it was like triplets, and he killed off, or he had killed two of them, but the third one was taken away and given to another family to raise.
Oh, shit.
And that was Lou. You know, he's raised by them. He comes back around, ends up, he's so talented that Nuada's says, here, take control of my army, and he does kill his grandfather.
Damn.
Yeah. I can't remember. Was it Perseus?
Possibly.
So, the Baelor story, he had his daughter locked away so that she could not have children.
I'm pretty sure that is the Perseus story. Yeah.
So, and that's how it happened. So she was put away, but she ends up having the babies. The babies were taken, and
right.
Except for the one, and he's the one that comes back and makes the prophecy occur. So he wasn't expecting that, I'm sure. But that was one of the things I found interesting, was how it mirrors the story in the Greek mythological cycle. And they're a decent distance apart in location.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely different cultures. So that's the Fomorians.
Sweet.
All right. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we're back, Eliza, what are you going to be talking about?
They'll find out when they come back.
Oh, snap. You'll find out when we come back.
Welcome back.
So what are you talking about today?
Don't kill me if I don't pronounce this correctly. I did look it up. Nick Nevin or Nick Nevin. I'm going to say Nevin because it sounds right to me. Anyway, it can either mean daughter of the divine, or it derives from Gaelic Nicnauin, daughter of frenzy.
Oh.
Yeah. She is the queen of fairies and witchcraft in Scottish Gaelic. So this Scottish goddess is tied to the festival of Samhain, That's right, folks. I'm diving into spooky season early.
Happy August.
JK, it's always spooky season when myths are involved. Da-dunch. I want it to always be Halloween season. It's one of my favorite holidays. So,
the decor is the best of the seasons.
It is. Anywho, is it? Nick Niven is one that helps usher in winter with ties to the Kyliak, which was mentioned in a previous episode.
Yep.
In some instances, she is used interchangeably. Because of this, both are tied to Samhain when the harvest dies and the days begin to be much shorter. Paying honor to Nick Niven was believed to ensure a mild winter, and to honor her, that would be done with feasts and toasting.
It makes sense that she would be conflated with the Kyliak then.
Yes. She governed the realms of magic and witchcraft. Her symbols included pumpkins and gourds, and often they were carved for protection and used to illuminate a path for a spirit's transition.
Aww.
She moves easily between worlds and is said to fly in the air accompanied by a flock of honking geese.
Okay.
Walter Scott wrote in 1931 that Nick Niven was a gigantic and malignant female, the Hecate of this mythology, who rode on a storm and marshaled the rambling host of wanderers under her grim banner. And all I thought was, a giant woman! A giant woman!
Kind of rude to call her malignant.
I know, but I've seen articles speculating she has similarities to Hecate by both being part of a sort of triple goddess situation.
Okay.
It was also believed she could turn water into rocks and sea into dry land. And she was seen more as a mother goddess with close ties to harvest.
Thought you were going to say water into wine.
This isn't Jesus. Lord.
And then you said rocks. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
That didn't make sense. But then when you said dry land into sea.
Yeah.
It like, I understood what you meant. My brain is not there yet.
Ooh, piece of candy. That's what it's like for Leo for rocks because she likes rocks.
I love rocks.
She loves rocks of all sorts. Anywho's it. As for being the fairy queen of Elfheim, there is an article from Thomas the Rhymer, not to confuse with Shifty Tom, circa 1220 to 1298 CE is when he was alive. There is an article he wrote called Meetings with the Queen of Elfheim, a magical and protective fairy queen. He was a laird and a local prophet whom lived in the borders region of Scotland. And it was a tale describing a man helped by Queen Elfheim, and he was returned from her realm, spending time with her, and was given a gift of prophecy. But in one translation of this text, the queen is quoted saying, I am not the queen of heaven, Thomas. That name does not belong to me. I am but the queen of fair Elfheim. Come out to hunt in my folly. A legend based on Thomas, the rhymer, claims he was kidnapped by the queen for a sexual affair with her.
Well, if he was kidnapped into a fairy area, then he's very lucky he was returned.
Right.
Content warning, talking about witchcraft and the trials.
She also appeared in witchcraft trials. For example, in 1597, Andrew Mann was accused of practicing magic to heal people. During his confession, he claimed to have an intimate relation to the Queen of Elfheim and testified to have been making love with the queen for 30 years and learning from her.
That's not how you get out of...
Exactly! So, like, I was reading these articles, right? And they were like, I mean, they could have just denied all this, but instead they're like, I was having sweet sex with the fairy queen! And you're like, what are you doing? Like, why do you... Why would that... Like, why would you expect that to get you out of being burned alive at a witch's stake? I'm just saying.
Zero self-preservation.
Yeah. So he also claimed to have several children with the Queen of Elfheim and had been granted gifts of knowledge, aka prophecy, and healing in return. Also, for some reason, the power to steal milk from cows. It was also claimed by Bessie Dunlap and Isabel Gowdy, believed to be witches, that the Queen of Elfheim appeared to them. Bessie claimed their first meeting was while she was in labor, and they had met many times, and the queen taught them how to heal both people and animals. Gowdy, however, claimed that they were also able to shapeshift into animals, fly on brooms made of corn stalks, and casted hexes on naughty children. There is no record of her execution, and it is said she vanished without a trace.
I mean, that's kind of neat.
Yeah. One article I read described the Queen of Elfheim goddess young and beautiful who could steal the heart of any man. Now, it's kind of interesting because I've seen various explanations of what she looked like. Mm-hmm. Some explain her to be more of like a mother goddess, old hag sort of look. Others as like a very beautiful young woman that could steal the heart of any man she wants.
Maybe she was a shapeshifter.
Nick Niven has contrasting stories with some believing or seeing her as a diabolical goddess. At the front entrance to Edinburgh Castle is the Witch's Well on the Esplanade. It marks where many women were burnt for witchcraft. There is also Maggie Wall's memorial in a stone structure just outside the small village of Dunning. Although unknown if Maggie Wall truly existed, it stands as a reminder of injustices that took place hundreds of years ago. I did not know until this research that Scotland suffered intense witch hunts, second in scope to German lands in terms of prosecution and execution.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm sorry that kind of went really dark really fast. As far as, like, the, there wasn't too much on her.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go, like, really digging. One of the things was saying the one guy that was saying that he was having a sexual affair with her for 30 years actually met her as a child, didn't see her for 28 years, and then had a sexual affair with her and had babies upon babies. Which doesn't make... Oh, I mean, I don't know how fairy birthing works, but that's only 2 years out of 30 of having several children.
Oh, I thought you meant he met her as a child, grew to be, say, 28, 30, and then after that had 30 more years of relationship, so he was, like, 60 or something.
No, it was, like, in that one... In one article, it said that for 30 years he was having a sexual relationship with her.
Mm-hmm.
In another article, it was saying he met her as a child, grew up, saw her at the age of 28, and then they had children.
Mm.
You know what? Don't quote me on any of this. There's too many different articles, too many different stories. Point being is she had a history of kidnapping people and meeting them multiple times to have sexual relations, taught them things such as healing animals and people,
mm-hmm.
which is sad to think that that is what caused them to be claimed to be witches. It's like, oh, how dare they be able to heal the sick and the poor and the people that broke the bones. So, after Christianization, it was showing how either she was seen as diabolical or she was seen as good. If she was seen in the good light, it was the Queen of Elfheim. If it was in the bad light, it was like more so like, oh, that's the goddess of witches. She sleeps with the devil, like all sorts of things, like more closely correlated with the dark side of Christianity.
I see.
And I'm just like, damn. Because that's not how she originally was portrayed, I don't think.
Right.
In the mythology.
It doesn't seem that way.
No.
So I was looking up to make sure that there were burnings in Scotland. Because in Salem, United States, there were no burnings. There were witch trials, but they were mostly hangings. And then one gentleman was pressed to death with stones.
Mm.
But there were no burnings. But Scotland apparently did have actual burnings with their witch trials. And the thing it online said, not only were there ones where they were burned alive, but apparently some were also strangled first and then their bodies were burned.
I find it interesting that this is the topic I chose, not knowing. I did not know I was going to be talking about that part of Scottish history. When I had just had, like, recently had dreams about running away from a European place to go to another European place because I was a witch in that time period and I was gonna die.
Yeah, the witch hunts were no joke, and we lost a lot of medical knowledge because a lot of the people who were killed were just wise women and men who were the healers of their towns. A lot of them were innocent of witchcraft and they just had extensive knowledge of local herbs.
Which is sad.
It is really sad.
Because, like, makes me think of Castlevania with Lisa, the love interest.
Mm-hmm.
And how, like, they're like, she's like, science! And everyone's like, witchcraft!
Yeah, basically.
Makes me so mad.
Herbology is a really cool line of study because one of the things they kind of teach you in it is everything's a poison, but if you use it in the right amount, it can heal instead of kill. So, for example, foxglove is known notoriously as a poison.
Okay.
However, its scientific name is digitalis. And if you use the right amount, this is not medical advice. Do not go use foxglove for any medical stuff. Go talk to your doctor.
Not a doctor.
But scientists in a lab take the foxglove plant and pull out the chemicals, and it's used as heart medication.
Oh, damn.
So, in the right amounts, things can be used to heal. But that's just one example. There's all kinds of really interesting plant facts that, like, one of the most poisonous parts of a plant can kill you with just, like, a couple granules. But another part of the plant can be used to make makeup, and it's harmless. So,
it's crazy.
It's science. It's witchery, and
witchery.
They kind of go hand in hand, and that's what these people were doing, and they were
executed for it.
So yeah. It's really sad.
And on that sad, dark note,
all right, Eliza, after all that darkness, give me something to brighten the mood. Her face, she's super excited right now. You can't see it.
So I already knew that I was getting a guitar for my 30th birthday. The problem was figuring out which guitar I was getting for my 30th birthday. I knew it was going to be an acoustic. I knew it was going to be not like a $100 guitar you just kind of pick up from someplace because it was my 30th birthday present. So,
oh my gosh, she would like disown me if I was like, here's your present.
I would have started crying.
Yeah.
Like, because I mean, I would have looked at you and been like, you could have asked me a few questions and I could have given you some guidelines, but no. Anyway.
Luckily, that did not happen.
So there were specific guitars I was looking at, and I started looking at, you know, Leah was like, hey, why don't we look to see how long it would take for it to ship if we have to order it instead of actually, like, going to play it someplace. And I was like, okay, cool. So I go to look, and apparently, due to COVID, there's a shortage right now on instrument supplies. I mean, that makes sense. There's been a shortage with
everything.
And the guitars that I was specifically looking at, they're on back order and they don't know when they're going to come back.
Everywhere. Like our state and bordering states, everywhere.
Like, we literally looked at other states and we're like, maybe if we just take a trip. No, that wouldn't have worked because it was also back ordered there. And then I found a possible guitar at this one store that was nearby, at a place where you could, like, sell used gear. And I called the store yesterday, and as soon as I called them, they're like, we don't have it. But Leah was like, okay, super determined. She started looking.
Yeah, I was Googling stuff on my phone. Like, everywhere had the ability to order it.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with that is we didn't know if Eliza would like the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important to get your hands on it and see if you like it. So we can't just order it and then be like, no, it didn't work out.
Right, because it was one of the more expensive ones.
Right.
So Leah was like, we're going to go for a drive. And I was like, okay. And so she takes me, like, a different way to the guitar store.
I was sneaking up on it, so she didn't know where we were going.
And
then I missed it and had to do a U-turn because it has a really weird driveway.
Yeah. But we ended up inside, and she basically was like, okay, I want you to try all the different types of guitars while I play on my iPad.
I was working on sticker art, guys. I'm working on it. The Cry Cut hates me, but I'm working on it.
Yeah. And I did play some really expensive guitars, but even though they're really nice and expensive, doesn't mean that it was, like, a good fit for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it might have sounded all right, but, like, my hands are not the biggest hands in the world. I have small hands.
You have proportionate hands to the size of your body.
I have small hands.
Oh my gosh. She's 5'4". Like, I don't know what she's expecting.
For a guitarist.
Apparently, to be an NBA player.
I fought a boy.
I know you did. That's why I said it.
For saying I'd never be able to make it into the WNBA because I was short. That is rude. Anyway, I say I fought a boy because I was 8 years old and the boy was like, no, I might have been 9. But regardless, like, just a year older than me. So we were kids.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless.
Off topic.
Off topic. Completely off topic. I started playing the guitars, like hearing the sound, and I picked up this Fender. And I had no idea that it was, like, their Southern Californian collection, which is kind of funny because that's where I'm from. And it sounded so good that Leah turned around and was, like, jiving to it. And I was like, okay, before I say this is the one, I want to try the different other ones. But the action was really good. It fit with my hands perfectly because I'm, like, double jointed on my fingers. So I can, like, I can bend my fingers ways normal people can't, and that's how I'm able to, like, kind of make up for not having the largest hands on a guitar neck. And it didn't really matter too much. It was just, like, perfect for my hands, and I loved it. So I picked that one, and then we got a hard case, and we got the protection plan on it, as long as it's not stolen or lost.
Because there have been a series of unfortunate events
with previous guitars.
Yes. So, we got that.
Yeah, to be safe. And then, I took some time, played the guitar.
For a couple hours
yesterday. And eventually, because I was starting to remember all the things I had written in my youth
mm-hmm.
of music. And even more so, like, there were songs that I used to think, oh, wow, that looks so complicated. And I just started playing it on this guitar. And I was like, I'm angry because of how simple this is. For example, one of my favorite songs, Thunderstruck by AC/DC, I start playing it and I was like, it's literally two fucking notes next to each other over and over and over again. You're just moving up and down the neck. I was so mad. But anyways, I love the song still. I'm just mad it took me this long to learn it. And
to give yourself the permission to try to learn it, because it's not like you tried learning it when you were younger and went, this is too hard, because you would have realized it sooner.
That's true.
Yeah.
But still. I'm still very salty about it. Regardless, because I was getting all my memories back from playing and everything, and it sounded really good, and I love the sound of it, I've called my guitar Munin, based off of the one raven of the two ravens that Othin has in Norse mythology, which means memory. So all we've done thus far is Leah made a stencil of Munin from the Crycut, and I put it on the part of the guitar where I know for a fact that I'm not, like, touching very often. And I used Posca Pen to put the name on there. And that's all I've done to it. Like, we've already talked about it. If I want to, like, add feathers or whatever to the design. I have a tendency to design my guitars. Like, that's what I do. Back when I was doing guitar lessons, I asked my guitar teacher. I was like, yo, will it change the sound if I do this, this, and this? And he was like, well, if you add stickers, it will.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about electric guitars, I'm talking about acoustics. If you add stickers, it will, but if you use pen, it's not going to be too much of, like, a hindrance. Posca pens might be a little bit different because it's actually a paint instead of a Sharpie marker.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I think it looks pretty decent. It's not like I've covered the whole guitar in Posca pen.
Right.
So, I may just leave it at that. I might do a little bit more design later on. Not sure. But I'm really excited about it. I love playing it. I've learned a lot of songs I wanted to learn within the past 24 hours.
Has it even been 24 hours?
Yeah. Like, Sea Shanties, Savage Daughter.
Mm-hmm. I like, heard that one.
All sorts of songs that I've been, like, over the years, been like, man, I'd really like to play that on a guitar. I have an electric. My electric's all right, but it's not the same.
You can't just take it somewhere and play. You got equipment that's got to go.
Right. Got to have it all set up to listen to it and for it to sound right.
Well, the funny thing is when she decided what the name was going to be, she couldn't remember if it was Hugin or Munin that was the Raven of Memory. So when she said it to me, and I would like to say, I have a sound processing problem. Disorder.
Yeah.
I have a really hard, like, I have to have subtitles on everything. I have a really hard time processing what I hear. So I thought what she was saying was she wanted to name the guitar the Raven that means memory. And I was like, damn, that is poetic. And then, like, we had a conversation, and it turns out she wanted the one that means memory.
Not that that's the whole title.
Yeah.
Not like Daenerys Targaryen, first of her name, yeah. Mother of Dragons. Like...
Exactly.
I could have gone that route, but Munin's a lot easier to say. All right, Leah. Something to brighten the mood.
Okay, so we've been playing ESO, and back in the day when we originally were playing, I had the subscription service, which gives you, like, all these perks. But when we restarted recently, I decided not to get it because I was like, I don't need to pay for that monthly. It's fine. Well, then we decided we wanted to get this super cool house system, and I still had a lot of in-game coin to buy it, but I needed just, like, a little bit more.
Just a little bit.
So in order to get that, I said, well, I'm not just going to pay for the coins and not get the perk, so I signed up for the subscription service. So I've been having a lot of fun with that, and we got this house that it's actually, like, a huge cavern system, and it has water and beautiful trees and stuff. So I just went like one day Eliza was playing her stuff and I just went ham for hours decorating the place. So
can I just say you have a motherfucking boat in your cavern?
I do. It looks like a little Viking boat too.
It's I was like, how did you get this? Just doing antiquities. What the fuck? Like,
strangely, I didn't think I was gonna like it, but one of the newer updates, or at least it's new since we started playing again, is antiquities. And basically you scry for a location and then you go be an archaeologist and dig it up. And I really took to it.
Yes.
I really, really like it. Like, I can zone out and just come back with thousands of gold worth of things to sell. And some of the things you find are actually things you can put in your houses in the game. So the boat was one of them. I actually leveled up my skill tree because one of the things I wanted to find was, because they give you leads, so it has the name on it.
Mm-hmm.
It was an ebony fox totem, and you guys know how I feel about foxes, but it was a couple levels above what I was able to do at the time. So I grinded to get my skill level up high enough so I could get this fox totem, and it ended up being one that you could put in your house. So now I have an ebony fox totem in my cavern by the fire pit. It's beautiful. I love it so much.
I'm happy you like that cavern. I had to tell Leah, I was like, listen, if you're not willing to pay for it, I'll help, like, split and go halvesies with you. Because we're both playing together anyhow.
Yeah. So that's my something to brighten the mood.
Nice. Work might send me away to another state for, like, a little bit. Might not. We don't know yet.
They haven't finalized any of the decisions. It's still being talked about.
Yeah, I'm not booking a hotel anywhere until I know it's actually happening.
So some parts of August, or maybe even the beginning, middle of September, we don't know when it's going to happen, might get affected, but we will update you guys so you know what to expect once we have more information.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. This is Coffee Table Mythos. We'll catch you next time.